report from Harvard finds that we're at a higher risk of experiencing another pandemic than we've been in years past. A major cause of pandemic risk is spillover of viruses from wildlife and livestock to people, and things like climate change and habitat disruption can raise that risk. Dr. Aaron Bernstein is the interim director of the Center for Climate, Health, and the Global Environment at Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health and an assistant professor of pediatrics at Harvard Medical School. He's the lead author of the report of the Scientific Task Force on Preventing Pandemics from the Harvard Global Health Institute. Dr. Bernstein, welcome to Central Time.
Great to be here, Rob.
I don't know if I usually think of pandemic prevention and environment and ecology in the same sentence. Can you connect the dots for us, please?
Yeah, fortunately, the dots aren't too spaced apart. If you look at pandemics like COVID-19, the ones that have happened in the past, and certainly this one, there's some themes that come out pretty clearly. One is, as the intro mentioned, the viruses that cause these pandemics are entering into people, usually from livestock and sometimes via from wild animals into livestock and sometimes directly from wild animals. But that's not just random chance. That's because we're changing how we engage with wildlife. And so when we do things like chop down forests, we may take away a home of some wildlife that may move somewhere and expose us to diseases that turn out to be problematic. A recent example of that was Ebola. And so we see time and again that our risk of pandemics starts with the movement of usually a virus from a wild animal into a person, sometimes via livestock. So if we address those root causes, what's really changing our relationship with these wild animals, we can go a long way to not having to deal with all of the stuff we're dealing with right now.
I want to stay on Ebola for a minute, because I know initially with Ebola and looking at the news reports, I got the sense that people are going out and contracting this disease in the middle of nowhere, in the wildest part of Africa. In fact, it was at the frontiers of development and deforestation in places in Africa. Why does that raise the risk so much?
Well, in that case, Ebola got into people from bats, and we know that bats can be reservoirs for Ebola, just like coronaviruses. And the research that's been done on the most recent big outbreak in Western Equatorial Africa found that bats had been displaced from their usual homes into those parts of Africa because their homes had been chopped down to plant mostly palm trees or palm fruit. And so those bats were essentially forced into closer proximity with people who are living, as you point out, on the edge of forests. And we think actually the first child who was exposed was actually just playing in a tree, near a tree, where the bats had been roosting. And so we see this time and again, our change to habitats, particularly forests, can really change where and when people get exposed to wildlife.
Are there practices we can change, really specific practices, to reduce that risk of the spillover of that virus from wild species to us?
Yeah. So for us in the United States and for folks in Wisconsin, one might reasonably ask, like, what can we do here that's going to matter to, you know, what's happening in the tropics where these diseases may be most likely to emerge? The first is to hold the people who are importing animal products into the United States from the tropics accountable. The United States, at least on paper, is the largest importer of wild animals in the world. So we're essentially asking folks to go into harm's way to get these animals and bring them to us. We also know that our consumer practices drive deforestation, whether that is for, you know, palm oil, shrimp, a host of other consumer products. And so corporations are recognizing this more and more. They're recognizing it, particularly in the climate standpoint. But it's also an issue for pandemic risk. And that's one of the great twofers here, is that when it comes to protecting forests, particularly in the tropics, you get value for climate change. You also get value for preventing pandemics. And then, of course, you get perhaps the most value for the people who live in those forests, the indigenous people who really, in most cases, are their best guardians.
Talking to Dr. Aaron Bernstein from Harvard's T.H. Chan School of Public Health about a new report on the links between environment, ecosystems, climate change, and pandemic prevention. What role does climate change play in all of this, Dr. Bernstein?
Well, climate essentially changes the rules of the game for life on Earth. So everything that can get out of the heat is running towards the poles. So whether that's animals, plants, and that creates opportunities for spillover to happen. So animals that didn't share habitats before might collide because they're forced to move. But I think the other piece of it, as I was alluding to before, is the critical piece, which is that, you know, we tend to think of forests and forest conservation in silos. We might think of it as a conservation activity to protect the organisms that depend on the forest. We might think of it as a way to take molecules of carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, which forests do. And interestingly, perhaps least so, to forestalling another pandemic. And when you take those three sets of values, and there are, of course, others, as I alluded to, you realize that forest conservation in the tropics is probably the best deal humanity's ever seen. And let me put some numbers on that. So globally, the world spends about $2 billion on forest conservation in the tropics every year. Now, that sounds like a lot of money until you realize that the administration has proposed spending $3 billion for drugs to fight coronaviruses alone, or the fact that we spend tens of billions of dollars taking care of people with HIV every year in the world. And, you know, HIV is an example of a disease that came from a wild animal to people. So, you know, we're spending relatively little on this. And yet, through some economic work we did, you know, the costs of really making a dent in the spillover risk are on the order of $20 billion a year if you really focus your efforts. And that's just, you know, a pittance to the cost of this one pandemic, which is on the order of $10 trillion. So our salvation comes cheap, especially, again, when we recognize that actions like conservation, and, you know, I focus on the tropics, but it goes beyond the tropics, has such compounding value for our health and for climate.
That's a big mindset shift, right? I mean, I think usually we think of, okay, if a new disease comes along, how fast can we get a vaccine? How fast can we come up with a medicinal cure or a treatment? Are you optimistic that we can get into this prevention mindset?
Well, it's really a great point, Rob. I mean, the reason that this task force report came out, the one that was mentioned in the introduction, was that folks started looking at our response to this pandemic and looking at what science has told us time and again about where the risk is. And it looked as if, you know, we were only focusing on after the fact. It would be, you know, it would be like you live near an intersection where there's a car crash every week because there's no stoplight, and all this expenditure is on auto repair shops. I mean, that's more or less what we're doing right now. Now, we need those auto repair shops. We desperately need more access to the vaccines that are available. We absolutely need to strengthen health systems in lower middle income countries where there's limited access. But there is no way we're going to get ourselves out of the fix of pandemic risk through auto body shops and what I would call these post spillover activities. We really need to focus on prevention at the source. And from the task force report, there is now a massive coalition. And this gets to your point, Rob, about our people seeing this differently. For the first time, we have a really deep collaboration between conservation organizations, the organizations that are focused on saving nature, and the health system strengthening organizations, the organizations that are focused on improving health outcomes for people who lack access to healthcare, because everyone now realizes that we get so much more benefit for the investments we make when we think of these together. And they're really exciting examples that are already happening where we're not thinking in silos, where we in fact realize that spending money, a dollar, on health system strengthening in a lower middle income country on conservation is a dollar spent on protecting health and vice versa.
Briefly, people might be excited about this idea now. What would it take to keep that excitement up when COVID is in the rearview mirror?
You know, unfortunately, COVID hasn't come close to being in the rearview mirror,
correct.
And especially in the low and middle income countries. And the other thing is, you know, this is not going to be the last time. And the evidence is clear that these, you know, because we live in a more interconnected world than ever, we've got more people living in cities, pandemic risk is growing over time, potentially. I mean, we can certainly do stuff to try and cut off the risk, but, you know, if COVID has shown us anything, it's that we have a really hard time containing pandemics, even with all the resources that have been brought to bear. So, you know, but let's, you know, I certainly hope that this is in the rearview mirror sooner rather than later. And then the argument is still there, which is that we have recognized that the health of people around the world is entirely relevant to our own through the pandemic. And the money that we spend every year providing, for example, care for patients with HIV or TB or malaria or nutritional programs, all of these programs that we spend in a sort of altruistic sense are actually investments in our own welfare, if for no other means through improving national security and security risks. But we have to, you know, what we need to demonstrate is this twofer, is that when we focus on the health of the people that are receiving care in places where care is not as available as it ought to be, part of that is about protecting the natural world that surrounds them.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Dr. Aaron Bernstein from Harvard.